This is the March 26 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois. Kurt Kimmel is here from AgMarket.net. He is in Normal, Illinois. And Greg Johnson, also from Champaign, Illinois, joins us from TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County farmer Tim Gleason. Let's get a list of items that we should discuss for the day. I think, Dave Chatterton, I'll start with you. What's on your list?
Yeah, Todd. I mean, it can be a long list. I guess the question is where to start. We have an RVO-SRE, announcement hopefully tomorrow or by the end of the month, according to the Trump administration. We've got a key USDA report with the quarterly stocks and acreage coming up next Tuesday. In the meantime, of course, we're watching what's happening in the Iran-US conflict and the headlines that go there. We're watching what potentially may happen with the China negotiations now that a date has been set. And of course, in the background, we got weather and some improvement in the drought situation in central Illinois, but something that certainly needs to still be watched. I think the most important of those, Todd, is still the headline risk and what's going on with Iran. And it has a grip on the commodity markets here that is led by the oil complex, but certainly has bled its way to the grain complex as well.
I'm not sure, Kurt Kimmel, if he left much that we should discuss out of that list. Anything that you can come up with? No, I think we're probably pretty good. I bet there were some things on the cash grain side, Greg, that he did not get to. What do you want to talk about for the day?
Well, I think the fund position, Dave kind of referred to the headline risk, and that kind of ties into the fund position. But I think we want to keep that in mind, talk about that a little bit. And then also farmer selling has been fairly heavy on this rally as farmers finally got a chance to sell something at maybe close to above break-even prices on old crop corn and beans. But new crop corn and bean sales remain very stagnant, very low. So maybe that's something we can delve into as well.
Okay. I want to poll all of you very quickly, just yes or no. Should farmers be making new crop corn sales? We'll talk about how much, and soybeans for that matter. Yes or no, Kurt Kimmel?
Yeah, we feel that this rally needs to be rewarded and continue to sell into it here, not heavily, but when you look at where we are for the February spring price and where we are now, it's definitely better. And we'd like to try to do better than break even. And as we approach $5 in Dease corn and hopefully $12 in November beans, I think it gives producers opportunity to do a little bit better than what we were looking at here last January.
Dave Chatterton, new crop sales?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, just to your point, the answer is yes. I think, as Kurt mentioned, the level, I think, is important, but the answer is yes.
And Greg Johnson?
Yes, maybe even a little heavier beans, maybe being 40, 50% sold on beans versus 25, 30 on corn, just because I think the acreage number could be heavy on beans, higher on beans, a little bit lighter on corn. Plus, we've got the big South American crop this year and even more acres next year. So for all those reasons, I like to be a little bit more heavily sold on beans and corn.
And so the why is you believe prices will be lower in November because of those two items you just mentioned.
Unless you tell me it's going to be a very dry summer, which could very well happen. We don't have the subsoil moisture. So again, if I knew it was going to rain this summer and everybody's going to have a good crop, I would say we would need to be 100% sold, but we don't know that. That's why we're talking about maybe 30 or 40% being sold.
Okay, Dave, back to you on this. Tell me some of the whys for the new crop sales in your opinion.
Yeah, I think Kurt hit on it. You know, we're at levels now, we're above crop insurance guarantees, Todd. We're hitting levels that are profitable on a number of producers' balance sheets. And the unpredictability and the volatility of this marketplace, if you haven't got that into your head by now and what's happened here of late, I don't know what to tell you, but that volatility has been working for us here of late, primarily led by what's gone on, as I mentioned, and with the war in Iran and the general kind of money flow into commodities. And I think Greg talked about that. We've had some very aggressive fund buying in the ag space. And getting to levels here that are very stretched. When I look at this, we've seen funds since February 1st buy almost 3 billion bushels across the complex, corn, beans, and wheat. and we're getting fairly stretched on that holistic view of where we're at. And to Greg's point, we don't know what's going to happen with weather this summer. Certainly that could be a factor. But I think the political, landscape here, at some point we have to realize that the inflationary element that's been brought into the marketplace, led by oils, but also, bleeding over into the ag markets, at some point becomes a negative in terms of economic growth. And not only in the U.S., but globally, I think there's, some talk about things that may happen. And so high freight rates, I think, are slowing trade and availability of diesel and bunker fuel on the marine side. So there's just a few concerns here. It doesn't mean sell everything. It doesn't mean we can't go higher, Todd, but I think you have to be a prudent risk manager and just admit to yourself, we don't know how this is going to turn out. We don't have a template for what's going on in the Mideast right now, let alone the China negotiations and, and the weather that comes after.
I was on a farm doc webinar earlier today, Kurt, and they were comparing things to the start of the Ukraine war in 2022 and then again in 2023, some differences. At the start of the Ukraine war, the price of corn was $8. By the time we got to the fall, it was $7, kind of remained there. And then by the time we got to the next fall, we were down at $6 in 2023. But we'd been down as low as $4.80. There is a difference between this war and that one. It's that Ukraine and Russia pushing us to $8 was really because it was a production area. The Middle East is not known for producing corn or soybeans, though they do produce a little wheat. So how do producers handle those price? Think about those prices in context of the war today.
All right, just wait for $7 and take that, I guess. I tell you. At the upper end there, that was huge profitability there. So, with their extreme, we're overbought. Now we spent, the last 2-3 years down at the lower end of the sector here, oversold. And when you get inflation and you look at overvalued and undervalued commodities, corn and beans have basically been undervalued, in my opinion. So from an investment point of view, it's worth taking a stab at. That's why the funds are probably long over 200,000 corn, over 200,000 contracts of soybeans waiting for something to happen. But as a producer, what we've been doing and most advisory services have been doing is stepping into this thing, getting some downside protection in several different ways, but have a price floor. Leave your upside open. I guess the old wordage adage back in the day has been hedge and defend. So you know exactly where you are. You have some flexibility to work with. Because as Dave said, headline news, we don't know. It wasn't that, a week ago, week and a half ago, come in here, beans were down limit. And before it's over with, we'll probably be up limit. So the volatility is going to continue to run rampant in through here. And there's some opportunities to capture something here if you want. When you look at over a 10-year span, there's probably 1 to 2 years you have a chance to make some pretty good money. And if things can get juiced up here on inflation or weather, I think there's a chance to improve our bottom line from what we were looking at the last one.
Dave Chatterton, you put the RVO and SRE announcement, that's renewable volume obligations and small refinery exemptions, on your list. The president on Thursday afternoon, when we're recording this, saying on his True Social posts that there will be an announcement of some sort for Ag Day on Friday. So that probably is out by the time that most people are hearing this live on the air at the radio stations. What's your expectation of that announcement?
Yeah, Todd, I guess a little bit concerned. I don't have any better insight, I don't think, anyone else about what the Trump administration is going to do. The rumors have said that it will be similar to the path that we've seen forward. So I guess your over under is around that 5.4 to 5.6 on the RVO, mandate. It's probably 75% on the reallocation. And so certainly, we'll watch to see what happens. My concern would be when you look at bean oil and to a lesser degree, the bean complex and the way that we've rallied coming into this announcement. I think the buildup into the announcement, Todd, the natural miss here is probably to be disappointed, whether it's a miss in the numbers or whether it's simply a buy the rumor, sell the fact type of a reaction. Once that number's on paper, we're moving forward. I think, you know, we're certainly, if that 75% number is accurate for the small refinery exemptions, I think certainly on the reallocation side, certainly there's going to be some court and lawsuits that follow. And it may take a while to straighten that out. So we'll take the numbers as they go. But, again, I think we've built a lot of expectation and positive expectation into what we're going to see tomorrow or by the end of the month. Trump also mentioning today that he's going to announce actions to a number of actions that will, quote unquote, help U.S. farmers. So we'll have to wait and see what that is as well.
And Greg Johnson, as you're thinking about this in the larger context of what producers should be considering, Greg's suggesting that it could be a buy the rumor, sell the fact event. What are you thinking?
Oh, I agree with what Dave just said. 5.4 to 5.6, it's kind of baked into the RVO number. The funds have really established a long position, not only in soybeans, but in soybean oil. So that's probably going to have to be quite a bit higher in order to get even more money to come into this marketplace. It just reminds me that gold and silver before the war had rallied so much. And then the war happened at the end of February, and everybody thought war is usually bullish for precious metals. And we've lost anywhere from 18 to 38%. Gold's down 18%, silver's down 38% since the war started. So, and it was the fact that the market had run up so much, the funds had bought so much that we basically just ran out of buyers. Now, I'm not saying that we're to that extent in corn and beans. There's a lot of, a lot more room for people to buy corn, but the soybean position for funds is the third largest ever. So not that they can't buy some more, but, it's that risk reward thing. There's probably more chance of the funds, having already bought the rumor, selling the fact versus buying even more. So as Dave said, you have to be a risk manager and ask yourself, is there more of a chance of it going up or going down? With the rally we've had, I think a lot of that good news might already be baked in.
Kirk Kimmel, next Tuesday, USDA will release the acreage and grain stocks figures. What numbers are you expecting from both of those at this point, and which will play more into the marketplace?
I'm going to say it again. Back in the day, they said buy land because they're not making any more. But last couple of reports, they found more planted acres. So I think it's a moving target. But benchmark-wise, the ag market team's at 94.4 million corn acres. It might be 95 bean acres. The team's at 86.1, but a lot of that's to the natural rotation of the crops from corn to beans. We're in a position though where there's some areas that maybe go into what's a little bit more economical. The idea is bean acres could be up a little bit more due to the finances, but I visited a couple of guys that beans aren't quite there yet. So it depends on your bean yield. So it's a moving target. I think it's going to have to be outside the trade ranges to be a significant market maker. But the grain stocks report, that's going to be our first benchmark to look at to gauge usage. About 9 billion bushels, the average trade guess on corn, soybeans 2.063, a little bit more stocks than a year ago. But with the uncertainty around the world and ethanol margins real strong, and this demand just really not going away for the moment into here. We'll see what those numbers come in at.
Dave Chatterton, you will have spent a good portion of the month of February, half of the month of March, thinking about crop insurance and discussing acreage with producers. What did they tell you then, and do you think today they will hold to what those outlooks might have been?
Yeah, Todd, it's a really interesting question. I think, our initial read on acres was that 94.5 kind of middle of the road expectation on corn, down from last year's, 90-year high, I guess, was probably going to be a little bit low, and that farmers were leaning a little bit more towards corn. As we've rallied a little bit, I think a couple of things have happened. One is certainly the fertilizer element and the cost structure on the input side has entered the equation on corn now. I mean, you can put a moving target on farmers have locked up 75, 80, 85% of their fertilizer needs before this really got started and going. But There are some open acres out there that look to us like they're backing into beans, particularly in southern Illinois or in places like the Dakotas, where they don't tend to do a lot of pre-buy or a lot of winter application. So I think that number is coming down. I still think it will be above the 94.5. I think, we've seen a few numbers, in the surveys here as high as 97. I don't think it will be that high, but we're gonna, to Kurt's point, we tend to find those acres in the spring. And assuming, that we have a good spring and that we're not interrupted or not late, I think that number that we get next week probably has some upside to it from the USDA. I think last thing, keep in mind those surveys went out in late Feb and early March, kind of before a lot of this latest, I'll say, push on the energy and the urea and the nitrogen side of the complex really got going.
And then, Greg, I finally saw my first planter running for the season in Champaign County. Your elevator is in the background, by the way. I'm wondering when you talk to producers, I know. I'm wondering when you talk to producers what they have been telling you.
Well, they've been telling me that the ground conditions are very good. We've had 3.5, 4, 5 inches of rain in the month of March. That follows 12 to 14 months of extremely dry, below normal precipitation. So the topsoil moisture is adequate. We still haven't replenished the subsoil moisture, but we do have enough moisture to get the crop planted. So farmers are anxious to go. I think they're going to, since it's only, late March and not April, I think we'll see people wait in general. There's always a few that'll get going here early, but I think farmers are optimistic. Well, there's a obvious statement, right? Farmers are always optimistic, but I think farmers are optimistic about getting off to an early start and getting both the corn and the beans planted earlier than normal this year.
Well, then the next thing, if we get an early start, there is an old adage that says if a farmer's planting corn, they're likely to continue to plant corn. Given the high price of fertilizer, will that be the case this year?
I guess I don't think so. I think we're going to see 94 million acres of corn and 86 million acres of beans. Maybe, that number may go up in June, but as far as the March report, I don't think you'll see a lot more than 94, maybe 94 and a half. But if you use 94 and use a 183 yield, that's a 15.7 billion bushel corn crop. With add the 2 billion carried over from this year, that's 17.7, and demand probably won't quite be 16 billion like it was this year. So 17.7 minus 15.8, that gives you a 1.9 carryout. Tighter than this year, but not by much, and not the recipe for $5 or $6 or $7 corn. So it just kind of takes us all back to the bottom line that, the prices probably aren't going to be much above $5, unless you tell me it's not going to rain very much in June, July, and August. And we have to go with the odds. 7 years out of eight, we do get enough rain in those 3 months that we have a decent crop. So, farmers probably need to sell corn as it gets close to that $5 range because, it could be $4 by the time we get to fall, four and a quarter anyway. So if 425 to five is the range and we're at 490 today, it might be, prudent to at least get offers in just in case that report on Tuesday is friendly for all of 35 seconds. So I've been encouraging farmers to get offers in because you just never know where this market will go and for how long it'll stay there.
Kirk Kimmel, I'll let you follow up on that. Offers in from farmers for new crop?
Yeah, we've scaled into it. 499 and three quarters is a popular benchmark to avoid even five, but 505, scale it up to 550. If something would happen, you could lay into it. But the main thing is, a lot of guys have been leaning a little bit more heavier towards the price floor or hedge and defend type. But whenever you see an explosive type of market, even like silver, for example, yeah, it'll go to the extreme, but it'll come right back down too. So you gotta have some cover positions so you have some staying power. What I've seen over the years, a guy make one margin call, he'll make a second margin call, the third margin call, he'll say, "Get me out," and that's when the hedge works. So have some staying power.
And then Dave Chatterton, because Greg mentioned the weather conditions in the Eastern Corn Belt seem to be pretty good today. A month ago, they were not. You wanted to talk about the weather. I bet it's Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Nebraska that you're concerned about?
Well, you know, I think certainly we need to keep an eye on those areas, Todd, and that's a primarily a wheat argument, I think, to a large degree, and maybe a milo or, you know, small grains. But I think we're still solving that moisture deficit in the Midwest. And though it started to rain in the United States, we have a long way to go to really get back to a normal soil moisture profile. Looking at the long range forecasts and, you know, stuff from the, you know, Eric Snodgrass and similar, I mean, there's, you know, a few different opinions out there, but it looks like the gravitation from a La Nina towards an El Nino type of a situation by late this summer favors, you know, decent rainfall in the periods that Greg had mentioned. But I think there's still an open, you know, open question that we could get pretty dry pretty quickly here. And, you know, farmers who are planting this week, I've got a few guys who are on their third day of soybean planting in central Illinois, but it doesn't look like a very friendly weekend. We're going to get awful cold tonight, maybe some hail and storms. It's going to stay cold over the weekend with more rain early next week. And, you know, we're getting off to a start. So I think, you know, weather is always a concern, Todd. It's the, you know, the old saying, you know, is weather trumps all, you know, can trump everything else. And I think that's still true to a large degree. We need the production. We need to assure ourselves that we have that supply, especially with the things going on around the world here that kind of put a lot of question marks in a number of other buckets.
Okay, so let's finish up our conversation, I think, by discussing the war and war's impact on the grain markets. You all, of course, have been through the beginning of the Ukraine war, so you have some context with which to put the war in Iran at this time. And I'll start with you, Dave, on how you see the commodity markets between now and the fall, because we have the Ukraine war. I've given you some of those numbers already, and what may or may not happen in the intermediary time. I feel like that you're all going to tell me it's likely to be a lower price, but I want to make sure that's actually the case.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, I would say that's a safe assumption, assuming that we get our arms around the situation in Iran and that the conflict, or, you know, a ceasefire is declared, the conflict ends, we're able to reopen transport in the Gulf of Hormuz, and you know, infrastructure starts being repaired that's been damaged. But that's a big if, I think. Unfortunately, right now, I guess my view, Todd, and it might be a little different from the others, we don't really have a template for what's going on right now. We've never seen the strait closed in this way. We've never seen, you know, military threats that have been carried out here. And it doesn't take a lot to scare off shipping and, you know, and transport through that region. It's, you know, a drone here or a strip strike there, and the insurance carriers and the ship owners do not want to enter that, regardless of military escorts or whatever the case might be. So, you know, I think we have support for our marketplace here, and we have the potential to go higher, particularly in the oil complex, that will have a drag on energies, so long as that situation is not resolved. Now, I think there, you know, the other side of that, there is a lot of pressure on the Trump administration to get this solved and get it solved quickly. It's bad for the inflation, or bad for the economy, bad for inflation, bad for the election, bad for the Republicans in a number of different fronts. But in general, you know, the world needs oil and we need economic growth. And so it's kind of unprecedented water here. And I don't think I would assume too much right now. I think you have to feel your way through day by day. And if you feel like the war is going to come to a conclusion, you need to be more aggressive in the way that you're marketing grain. But until that point, I think I'm a little bit more hands off.
Greg Johnson, if the war were to be settled, it seems that the destruction that has taken place within the Middle East of the nitrogen production facilities, 3 to 5 years, they're saying, to bring up the 17% that was lost in one of the attacks. The gas and oil fields have been hit, and particularly the ends of the pipeline, so the places that export, feels like that might take some time to rebuild. Don't know how long on it. I've not seen something. But the point, I suppose, is even if we were to settle the issue, nitrogen might be high-priced, or at least supplies come off the marketplace. Diesel fuel probably will remain much higher priced, I would think. How do you think about this in context of what corn, soybeans, and profits look like for farmers?
I think Dave hit it right on the head. I think if you knew when this war was going to end, you would want to be a little bit more aggressive and up your sales. But, there's been myriads and myriads of Middle East wars. And if we get this one done in a month or less, that would be the first time. I just have a feeling this could drag on, you know, for longer. You have to have an opinion. And as of today, my opinion is this is not going to get resolved in a matter of weeks. It's probably going to take months. And so if that's the case, you probably don't have to be as aggressive on new crop corn sales. You know, they'll follow the oil prices. But eventually, hopefully, we get it solved. As far as inputs for next year, there's talk about removing the variable tax on Moroccan phosphate exports. That would help. We can produce nitrogen here in the United States. Natural gas is much, much cheaper than it is overseas. So, you know, whether the companies choose to do that or not, that remains a big question, because quite frankly, they can make more money by producing not as much and keeping the price high. So there has to be some either government push or a very big economic incentive for them to really increase production. That can happen, but it would probably occur at a higher price or under some political pressure. So I guess I don't see the oil price falling out of bed tomorrow. I think this could take months, but again, I don't have any inside information. I wish I did, but everybody has to have an opinion. And I just like getting some sales on the books, just because I fully recognize that nobody knows. So, you know, we have to get some sold, and we hope that's our lowest sale, and we'll sell some more if, in fact, it does go higher.
And Kurt Kimmel, farmers will hear high price of oil likely to stay high, and they will be convinced that the price of corn will stay high along with it.
Well, I hope so. But when comparing the two wars, when you look at the Ukrainian war, that's more of a production concern, I think, than anything, whereas this is more of an input concern. And how to tie this together is, when you look at the grain market takes the stairs up and the elevator down. If you notice the energies and everything else, it takes the elevator straight up and the steps down. So I agree with what's been said. It's going to be prolonged. It's going to take quite a bit of time for you to feel the relief at the gas pump or input costs. It's going to be drawn out, and I think there's going to be hesitation to really push the grain market a whole lot lower here until we move into summer and see how the crop matures.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. Greg Johnson from TGM Total Grain Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Your final word for the day.
Well, the old rule of thumb is that spreads lead the way, followed by basis, then followed by flat price. The spreads are not indicating that we have a shortage or a tight supply. Basis levels also aren't indicating that. So the flat price has gone up in reaction to some of the headline news, but the underlying fundamentals don't really argue for a extreme tightness in either corn or soybeans. So I would say keep that in mind when it comes to time to determine where you're going to make sales and at what levels.
Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing, your final word?
Yeah, I mean, just right on the tail of what Greg said, I think he's right. He's going, you know, exactly the direction that we need to be looking. And that is that, you know, we've got a lot of fun length in the marketplace here. We've had the benefit of a big spree of buying. We're looking at the geopolitical landscape, and it's been supportive of our complex so far. But at the end of the day, we always gravitate back to those fundamentals. How long that will take is an open question, and we've discussed that. But at the end of the day, we're at prices that are somewhat elevated, at least from where we started. And we're in a situation where if you take all that geopolitical risk out, or a good portion of it out, we're still in what I'll call an oversupplied or a burdenly supplied marketplace, you know, not only in the U.S., but globally. And the rally that we've seen, to Greg's point, we haven't seen cash follow in the U.S., but we haven't seen cash follow from our export competitors as well. So every day that the CBT is going up, we're seeing those Brazilian offers and those Ukrainian offers and those Argentine offers not really go up or to a large degree. So we're getting less competitive on the export front. We're in a situation where we need to keep our demand profile as high as possible to kind of keep that stocks to use balance in check and keep prices somewhat close to where they're at and in a profitable level. So again, I think it just comes down to be a prudent risk manager. We don't know what we don't know, but you can take steps to take some risk off the table and hopefully do so at a profitable level.
And finally, Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net, your final word.
Yeah, as Dave mentioned there, headline news, it feels like the wild, wild west all over again here. I mean, when you see energy market and the stock market move millions and millions of dollars in a defensive mode, then a tweet comes out here 5, 10 minutes later to justify, you can't fight that. There's no way you can predict that. They'll hopefully have some transparency and look into it. And as Greg mentioned, the weather. You look out west through here, the wheat crop is deteriorating quite a bit. So these crop conditions report for wheat's going to be watched real closely. And boy, if that heat dryness moves to the east, watch out.
You've been listening, of course, to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Kurt Kimmel from agmarket.net, Greg Johnson from Total Grain Marketing, and Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.